Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You are watching to yet another exciting installment of Let's Weekend. I am, of course, your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Filippo D'Anolfo, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Lowe, Therese Salmon. Say hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Hopefully this is going to go through well. I've been having a bit of a connection issue for the last couple of days. And on top of that, AVG has been fucking with Firefox. So I've got that now uninstalled. So hopefully that'll be the end of the troubles with that, at least for the time being. But other than that, we've been kind of having a bit of a shit week. So basically what's happened is that we are now officially under a national emergency because
there was a hurricane and there was tornadoes and earthquakes and terrorist attacks.
No.
There's an
brown
epidemic.
People, in Mexico,
people are dying
the
from the flu. Oh,
we'll tell you all about it in a little later. Basically, it all has to come with the fact that our president is a spoiled toddler, and he's basically gotten to the stage of, I'm going to break all my toys and hold my breath until you say yes.
Oh, yeah, the traditional presidential tantrum.
Yeah. but we do have some good news, believe it or not. Amongst other things, we've got some more people who are entering the 2020 race. We've also got some good stuff, some new trailers and stuff, including one very anticipated movie and one other anticipated movie whose anticipation may have slightly gone down after the trailer premiered. And it has everything to do with who's playing the genie. Also, just some other weird shit, like Russia is being invaded by polar bears, which I'm surprised that hadn't happened before, but...
I thought that ship sailed long ago, but...
Yeah. Okay. No, first time for everything, I guess. Oh, yeah, and I'm going to go ahead and add this to the show notes, because we don't already, but... A very major figure of American politics, even though you probably haven't heard of him, and I've only talked about him a little bit on this show, actually died this week. And even though you probably have only somewhat heard of him, you've definitely run into his followers. And he's also considered an elder statesman by certain very loathsome individuals. But we'll tell you about him. When it comes to it. But until we get always, we have to start off with what we've been up to this weekend. Phil, get us started.
I'm kind of knee-deep in Doom, basically, how that's been going. That's pretty much the only thing I've been doing this week, apart from listening to the second book of the Bobverse, which I had hoped that I would finish by this week, but then Doom happened.
As it tends to do.
Yeah, as it turns out, when you start diving into things like, realizing that GZ Doom will allow you to import Quake format models so you can actually have 3D figures instead of sprites. Yeah, that's a rabbit hole, and I went down it.
Oof.
I've been learning how to do that, and now I really need to get my shit together and get my old Blender learned, and at least get myself competent enough to be able to do some basic models and imports and exports of different model formats, so I can get those into the game. It's turning out to be that this entire project is developing a skill set that I didn't know I had, and turns out at some point during the week I realized that I'm now developing a game. So.
Oh.
Yeah, that's
good. They do tend to just take on a life of their own, don't they?
Yeah.
So yeah, I am certainly using the Doom engine to do it, but this is now not just like a piddly Doom map. This is a full-on project.
It's a game.
Yeah.
So, it's a game.
Yeah.
Let me know if you need a rider.
Yeah, we may very well.
Cool.
Mm. Awesome.
All right, so that's kind of been pretty much it for me. Oh, yeah, and I saw Ralph Breaks the Internet, which was awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, that's out now. I forgot.
Yes.
It's been out, actually. In fact, it's fixing to be on Blu-ray pretty soon.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I was so behind, right?
Yeah, but it came out digitally this week, so that's what we're talking about.
It is 100% worth the few minutes that, you know, with the Disney princesses is pretty much worth the price of admission all by itself.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I didn't think they could go any further with the first after they did the first one there, but they managed to really make something that's truly hilarious.
Really?
Because it's just so relevant now. It's just awesome. Yeah, if you have a chance to see it, well, get it. It's great. So, and that's pretty much been my week. What about you, Pat?
Final Fantasy 14. I got Dark Knight to 70, so that happened. And then I started a new character over on Gilgamesh because one of my friends on Tonberry has a really large and active free company over there. And I realized that I can get characters leveled up, jobs leveled up pretty quickly. So that's what I'm doing. Actually, right at this moment, I'm just working on that character. I figured out that I can start a character from the beginning, and about 5 hours worth of work can unlock the first dungeon. So I basically got home from work and managed to grind a character up to level 17 before the maintenance happened. So I'm going to start doing dungeons and what have you tonight. And it's fun. And just because I've been leveling all these other jobs, I haven't played Lancer / Dragoon in a while. And that's where I'm starting on Gilgamesh, because that's the only one of the classes that I really know that is available from the beginning. So, yeah, that's been my week.
All right, Chris, what about you?
So I watched the first week of the AAF, the Alliance of American Football, mm-hmm. which is sort of the one of the first of the two alternate leagues. Mm-hmm. That were announced. This one is kind of in a partnership right now with the NFL, not being like the XFL, trying to compete with the NFL. Mm-hmm. But it has 8 teams. Let's see, there's one in Birmingham, Alabama, one in Georgia, Atlanta, Orlando, Memphis, San Antonio, Salt Lake. Yep. What else? There's San Diego and Arizona. I like the uniforms for all of them. And I think so far my team that I'm following is Orlando. And their first week, they hung a 40-6 win on Atlanta. Just destroyed them.
I really respect what this league is doing because they're going into a lot of cities that don't have NFL franchises.
Yeah, or used to have once.
Yep, and they're going to be rewarded for that, mark my words.
Yeah. Yeah, and it definitely seems like they have a lot of smart things going on here. So tech-wise, they have they use some of the cameras that sort of go around above the field to essentially have like a ninth field judge. So if there are calls that are missed by the refs on the field, they can sit, call in like, hey, you should call this, that sort of stuff. One cool thing they do is when there are replays, you actually get a video and audio feed of the replay official sort of going over the play and sort of, laying out what they – what they're looking at, what they're seeing, and sort of what decision they're coming to, which is a nice bit of transparency that you don't get in the NFL. They have no commercial breaks as far as like stoppage. Most of it they do sort of a picture in picture. So the action is going on, or they're showing whatever feet of the field is going on. And that just makes it such a faster paced game. They also got rid of the kickoff, the point after kick. If you have to go for two whenever you score a touchdown. And so there's no kick kickoff. So there's no, the only way you can do a touchback, I think, is if you're down by at least 17 with like 5 minutes to go. And you do like a 4th and 25, essentially, sort of play. And so you have to sort of get all of that in one play, or else you don't get the ball, get to keep the ball.
Mm.
Yeah, there's lots of smart things that you're looking at. I think they limit the amount of blitzes, because right now after the first week, like, defenses are ahead of the offenses, which makes a lot of sense, because the two sort of position groups that are pretty low on in terms of skill are quarterback and offensive line, because anybody that's good has a job in the NFL at this point. So the first two games that were on Saturday were very much full of the quarterbacks on the worst teams, which is San Diego and Atlanta, sort of just getting tons of pressure and sacks and all that. Which also ended up, one of the cool things they also do is they mic the coaches. So when Mike Martz gets mad at his quarterback sucking, you hear it as he's like contemplating, oh, we need to bring in the other guy, because this guy is not doing it. It's pretty great. Another cool thing is they actually show games on the site, AF.com. Most of them, at least, they've shown. Though if you know what you're looking for, you can find streams of games on YouTube. Because they don't have the greatest lineup of channels they're partnered with. So they're mainly partnered with NFL Network and CBS Sports Network, which are two that you generally have to get to like a higher tier sports package on most of your networks. And I think they are a couple of those have been on the site. Some have not, which is not great, but as I said, YouTube, somebody's streaming those games usually. Just make them easy to easily accessible, which has been nice. There are some pretty cool stories. A lot of players are either guys that came out of college and never found a team to stick on. There's a couple that got drafted but just never stuck. The guy that is quarterback for the Birmingham Iron is a guy named Luis Perez. He has a really interesting story. So he never played football as a kid or in high school. He did not play until he got to college, which he went to college in, I think it's Texas A&M Commerce, a Division II school, and not exactly one you would expect to be big on sports. So he kind of walked on there and essentially was he was at junior college the year before, Southwestern College. So he wanted to play, and he was 8th string. Like the number 9 quarterback on the team. Was recommended to switch positions, but decided not to. But when he got a chance to play, he did really well. And so he did eventually get to the NFL once he got done with college. He was on the Rams, the LA Rams. For a bit, but didn't make it there. Came to the AAF and did really well in his first game. So much so there's kind of rumors of teams inquiring about him. But the other fascinating thing is he is a really good bowler. He, as a kid, he was one of the top amateurs in California. Had 12 perfect games. And Jesus. Was potentially going to go to college on a bowling scholarship. Kind of ended up looking.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah. Like my high school had a bowling team, which I would try out just to play some free bowling with some friends. Never made it, but I mean, I'm in the Midwest. It's bowling nation over here, as Teresa can vouch for. Bowling is very popular.
It is.
Because it's freezing cold in the winter, so you want to go somewhere you can bowl and have some shitty food.
Yep. Nachos, beer.
Yeah. And that stuff's pretty cheap usually.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's like one of the cool stories that have come out. There's definitely some really cool players in here. I know a couple that I saw when they played at Ohio State. But yeah, it's a pretty cool league, and it looks like it's – I know their first weekend, their ratings were higher than the NBA game that was on around the same time between the Houston Rockets and the Oklahoma City Thunder, two playoff teams. Pretty big game, which definitely bodes well for the appeal of, you know, having more football. Mm. And for the most part, it was a pretty solid set of games. None of the games were really all that bad. And this was after these guys kind of basically having mini camp for about a month beforehand. So not a ton of time to prepare. So I assume it'll get better. But yeah, the not being on big networks is going to be the one issue. I think there's going to be one of the games is going to be on TNT before the NBA All-Star, like Saturday night stuff happens. So if you want to check that out, that is on tomorrow night. I think the playoffs are going to be on CBS. And the championship game, I think, is especially on CBS. I think TNT is also going to have at least one playoff game. And I think also, like, Bleacher Report's, like, live streaming stuff is also going to have some games here and there. But also,
you know, now that I think about it, taking a very modern approach to it, you might consider the possibility that not having a TV deal won't hurt them at all because of online distribution.
Yeah, but I... It would be nice if they had like a package, like, hey, here's, you know, $20 and you get the season to watch.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Cause right now it seems like a little bit spotty in terms of what you can watch on their site or not.
Oh.
And yeah, they're not, and they're not as upfront of like, what can you watch? What can't you? Which is why the, you know, somebody streaming it on YouTube is a nice alternative. But yeah, I definitely, and the cool thing is they have an app where as you're following it, they let you like try and predict the plays that are coming up, and it's about 30 seconds ahead of what you're seeing on TV, so there's a little bit of a delay. But the cool thing is it shows like the players on the field, like what they're doing. It tracks it pretty well. It doesn't always work that well. I had a few times where it wasn't. I would like pick my stuff and it would never progress to like, okay, the play's gone, here's what happened, sort of thing. But for the first week out, it worked pretty well. It needs some more options on there, because it's basically like, is it going to be a pass or a run? Which side of the field? And is there going to be a first down or touchdown? And you have like an account level to it. So you get sort of XP as you get things right. And I don't think there's anything you do with that. So it's like my account is kind of level 8. Doesn't really mean anything, and I wasn't always paying attention to it. It doesn't give you a good idea of like, hey, a play is coming in, you should probably get your picks in, sort of thing. So there's a lot of times I was like, you know, watching the game, I look down like, oh shit, I missed something. Yeah, it's a neat thing, and it's something that I think the NFL is going to be looking at a lot of the things they're doing here. Which, you know, works really well as like a developmental league, especially with the replay stuff. They're going to definitely need to do that sort of stuff. But yeah, it's a pretty cool league, and so far it's been working out pretty well, and look forward to watching some more of that. Yeah, I've been watching a bunch of Netflix stuff, some of the recent movies they've gotten on there, which is The Incredibles 2, which is really good. I also watched Ant-Man and the Wasp, which, having not watched the first one, was a little bit confusing for a bit. But it also is a follow-up to the Civil War movie that they did, because I guess as a result of him going to fight in that, he's essentially gotten like international trouble, and sort of the compromise, he has like 2 years of house arrest and 3 years of probation. So, like, the beginning of the movie is him, like, going through a makeshift, like, ant tunnel with his daughter. Because there's only so much he can do being stuck inside the house. But obviously, shenanigans happens and he's able to get out. Mainly because they put the boot on an ant and let him just kind of do the things that he would do on a daily basis. And there's a lot, it's really funny. It's a really funny movie. But yeah, I definitely want to see the first one, but I'll have to get the Blu-ray at some point. But I also watched the Ken Jeong special. It's on Netflix now. I think it's called You Complete Me Ho. And yeah, there's a good bit early on where he's like, you know, where are all my Asians in the house? And find some Koreans. He's like, let me guess, your last name's Ho. He's like, yep. And finds out the woman's name was Tran Ho, which is the name of his wife, who is also in attendance. He talks about her a lot. Talks about how she went through breast cancer, really nasty stuff, like around the time that he was first filming The Hangover. He talked a bit about that, especially how supportive the cast was. I think he said the guys would actually drive him down to L.A. from Las Vegas so he could see his wife during the shooting when they had off days, stuff like that. Talks a bit about the movie, and if you've seen it, his small penis and all that. His big joke about how he's a grower, not a shower, that sort of stuff. Talked about Community a little bit. Also talked about his Dr. Ken show and also being on Crazy Rich Asians. And also that the director for Crazy Rich Asians was directing this special, which the crowd starts cheering and he's like, knock it off. This is my show. There's lots of rich jokes he makes. Yeah, it's a really funny show. He does the jerk off thing all the time. Yeah, it talks about being a doctor. If you remember the story from a few years ago where somebody in his audience was having a seizure, and he was helping the paramedic sort of diagnose it and figure out what's going on and get them help.
Yeah.
And all that sort of stuff. He was talking about that. Yeah, it's a really good show. You should definitely check it out if you're into his style of comedy, especially vulgar comedy, because it's a really good one. And as for games, I played Tetris 99, which is announced on the Nintendo Direct that we'll talk more about on Day Zero update.
Yep.
And that game is really good. It's really ridiculous. It's kind of a Tetris battle royale.
How is that not a clusterfuck?
It's essentially you're playing Tetris multiplayer with 98 other people. And it is a clusterfuck.
That's what makes it fun.
That's the point.
Yeah. I think the highest I've gotten is 12th. And yeah, so targeting is the interesting thing with that. So with the left stick, you can specifically target certain people if you want. You can move like a cursor around to highlight the different play fields that are around. And that's one of the really cool ways, the way they present it. There's 7x7 grids on both sides of your play space. And that's the other people that are playing. It's not 100% live, but it's pretty close. So you can definitely like look around and see, you know, oh, here's players that have a ton of bullshit in their play field, and they're about to die, that sort of stuff. And so with the right stick, you can pick different kinds of targeting options. There's like one for like players that are getting close to KOs to sort of pile on. There's one for just pick random people. And there's one for attackers. So anybody's attacking you, you can do that. Which at certain points, you can kind of just fuck yourself over, because I think at a certain point, a lot of people focus on attackers to sort of defend themselves. And so if you're just attacking a bunch of people, when they start attacking you, your play field just fills up with shit fast. I've had a bunch where, because it'll pop up on the side, like, if you don't start, you know, get some lines, there's going to be a bunch of bullshit filling up your space.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, if you're getting bad drops, as far as like pieces that are coming up, yeah, it goes south real quick. But the good thing is that getting back into a game is pretty quick. It's maybe like 30 seconds at most. So yeah, I've definitely had some real bad sessions where I'm out in like the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Real fast. But I've had some where I've gotten decently far in like the teens. But yeah, it's really fun. It's free for Nintendo Switch Online members, which is a pretty cool. It's like one of the first cool things they've done for those people.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of the NES stuff, I think like the coolest thing they've done with that is some of the like special edition versions of these games. Because I think like Dr. Mario, they have the special version that essentially just starts you at like one of the special stages that people rarely ever see. Because you have to be like so amazingly good at that game. But also, it's on one of the special stages, so if you're not that good at it, you're going to die pretty quickly.
Yep.
And that's one of the issues with it is that a lot of the time it's like, here's this really hard section. Like, I think the Metroid one takes you directly to Ridley.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, I've never gotten to that before. So Bend I died over. Pretty quickly.
Yep.
But yeah, it's a cool way to kind of highlight cool parts of these games. Though I definitely would like a way that if they had like, you know, multiple like save states for these games. Like, hey, here's, you know, when you get, you know, this weapon in Metroid, go ahead and have some fun with that. Sort of thing. That could definitely be something that's really cool instead of just here's this one save state. Otherwise you need to just play the regular game and try and get there yourself. And also the weird thing that Nintendo's been doing the last couple months where it's like, oh, everybody in the West, you get two games. Japan, you get three.
Yep. That shit's got to stop.
Yeah, it's like, if you remember Game Room for Microsoft, they came out strong with like seven games a week. Then pretty quickly it was down to five. And
yep.
Down to three, and it's like, oh, you guys don't have anything to add. This is a dumpster fire pretty quickly. Yep.
Why do you guys suck?
Yeah. It's like there's, you know, hundreds if not thousands of NES games. You should be able to pull some stuff. Even if you want to do like Japan exclusive stuff, like there's, you know, filler stuff you could have for the West if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's not the greatest, like Nintendo has plenty of bullshit on the NES that they could easily put on if they need to. But yeah. That's Tetris 99 has been really quite good. And one of the big surprises as just weird Tetris gets to be more of a thing. Because we had like Puyo Puyo Tetris in 2017. We had Tetris Effect last year, and now it's Tetris 99. But yeah, that's been pretty cool. And I started Crackdown 3. That's about all I've done. Because
the thing that happened.
Yes. So I went to go play it this morning, and then found out, oh, the amount of size it needed was bigger than what it had downloaded before. So I needed to free up space so it could just finish downloading the rest of the games, the two different versions of it. The campaign is not that big; it's like 15 gigs, something like that. Like the Wrecking Zone multiplayer stuff is like 10. So it's not a very big game. And the weird thing is that there are, when you go to start it, there are different characters. I don't think it's story difference, but Terry Crews is one of them, his character. Which is obviously the way I imagine most people would play. Because I don't think there's any, like, you know, gameplay differences. I don't think they play differently. I think it's just purely as an avatar, and the beginning is pretty good because he's having like a pep talk with his crew, And he's yelling out some really weird shit. It's like, quack, quack, motherfucker. And it's like, how did it take this long to get Terry Crews as the main character of a game?
Yeah.
So basically they just told him to go ham.
Yeah. And they're going to, I forget what city they're going to, but the terrorists they're worried about ends up shooting down the ship and really fucking up Terry. Like his skin gets charred and all that. He's nearly dead. And when they wake up, or when he wakes up, he kind of finds himself in like a rejuvenation tube. Is basically like half a person. Now his skin fucked up, but he's basically missing everything below his torso. Which is really kind of weird and fucked up thing to show people in this game. Which also kind of reminded me of Genlock, Rooster Teeth's Genlock. Because that is kind of what they do with Michael Jordan's character. He gets into... He like sacrifices himself in the first episode. And then you find out he's not actually dead, and it's sort of part of this program to have people like mentally pilot these mechs. And he's also half a person, the exact same way. Less gruesome. It's definitely not, you know, charred human being with like a chunk of his spine hanging out the bottom of him.
Yeah.
They're a little bit more tasteful with that stuff, but I was like, this is weirdly similar to Genlock. But yeah, I went and moved around. I collected some orbs. I don't remember if this was in the original, but they have the meter is sort of number based, so it tells you like, oh, you're at 0.2 for agility sort of thing. It makes it a little bit easier to tell like how close you are to the next level sort of thing, which is pretty cool. The game doesn't look great. It looks fine. You can definitely tell the game has been in development for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the graphics definitely don't stand out as like, oh, this is like cutting edge from the last couple years sort of thing. But it seems to play fine. I collected orbs, which is half of what you need to have in Crackdown. And so far, no zombies.
Good.
So that's better than they really should have put Crackdown 2 out on PC, so you could be like, well, at least it's not that. You know, set a bar for what this game is, because I think I've seen people kind of being kind of tepid about it, and like the release of this game very much did not have a lot of hype going into it. Especially compared to, you know, Metro and some of the other games, though. Kind of the best thing for, I guess, Crackdown 3 is it's not Jump Force.
Yeah.
Everything I've seen about the campaign stuff in that game. Oof.
Oh, yeah.
I was looking at Giant Bomb's video, and like the characters don't emote in the cutscenes.
Nope.
So Goku has his like angry combat face, but in regular non-combat situations. It makes it look very much like somebody imported models from ripped those models out of other games and imported them into this. Unreal Engine project. I would not be
surprised if that's what they did.
Yeah, and there's lots of weird, like it's only Japanese voice acting in it. And it's weird because like Light is voice acted, but not Ryuk.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he has subtitles for when he's talking. And it's like, what, did they not get the rights to that stuff? Or did not get the voice actor in? So it's like, well, we got to have him talking. This story doesn't work. It doesn't really work anyway. That thing seems really weird. I really knew something was up when they had the beta and it never worked. Like their servers were broken for that. And they just never did anything about it. I was like, oh, this, okay. And the fact that it wasn't a big deal, like nobody made a fuss about it on the internet, kind of really said how many people cared about that game. Especially when it's coming out the same week as a bunch of other big games. But yeah, that's been a weird thing for this week. But yeah, how about you, Teresa?
I have been catching up on some of my TV series that I'm watching, Letterkenny and Voltron. And we finally went to the movie theater because it's still playing here, or at least it was. And we saw Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which was awesome. Longer than I thought it was going to be. But definitely enjoyed that a lot. And as far as gaming goes, I don't even know if I played Final Fantasy XIV this week. I kind of feel like maybe I didn't. I have no idea. It's been a black hole week. But I've been playing.
Well, now I can tank you through pretty much whatever. So
yeah.
I've got that 70 Dark Knight.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I've played since Sunday. Gosh, what a week.
Yeah, we gotta do something about that.
Yeah, for real. For real. But I got a new phone, so I've been playing mobile games. So I was playing Kingdom Origins. And I can mostly see it on the phone if I put on my glasses. And I downloaded one called Icicle, which is a nice little twitchy game. That made me scream a lot. So, you know, that's something. And then, other than that, I've just been kind of taking care of, personal finance business, which has eaten up a shit ton of my week. So yeah, whenever you want to do anything financial, you've got to have like 500 documents in order to do it. So yeah, that's really,
it's basically a fiscal colonoscopy.
It is. And, you know, the real treat without lube is that if all this goes through, we would be closing on a condo the exact day that we owe the IRS. So,
that is a firm rogering.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
we'll see how that goes.
Because yes, like most every other American, I am getting completely and utterly screwed with taxes. So, but, you know, I tried to warn people. We tried to warn people.
Yeah.
They just didn't listen to us.
Recurring theme of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So our usual.
Yeah, trying to say this, he's not.
He doesn't give a shit about us, you know? Yeah. But yeah, and trying to explain this to my mom, who thinks she's going to get her usual $5,000 back. Oh, no. And I actually texted her, my sweet summer child. This is not how tax code works. Well, I paid in. I should get it back. No. That's Social Security. This is taxes. So I don't know what it's going to be like for her, man. We usually get $2,500 to $3,000 back, and this time we're paying in $850. So. Yay. How much longer with Trump here, huh?
Hopefully not long.
Yeah. Oh my god. And how much longer to clean up all of his shit?
Yeah, forever.
Yeah, I think so. But that's about it for me. What about you, Brandon? You haven't gone yet, have you?
No, I have not.
Okay.
He never does until everyone else has.
Yeah.
All right. First things first, am I still coming through okay?
Yeah,
of course, we're
good. Okay, just checking. All right. So I finished Kingdom Hearts 3.
I am amazed that you finished so quickly. That is just, yeah, that's awesome.
He plays through Kingdom Hearts like I level up Final Fantasy 14 characters.
Dude, right?
Yep. Okay. Hey, so, well, I'll be honest, it basically ended the only way I think it could, which is kind of with a bittersweet tone. Because, you know, everybody gets a happy ending, but let me put it this way. After the game came out, they put out what they called a secret movie, like they've done with all the other Kingdom Hearts games. Where you have to, like, go in and do a bunch of stuff, and then you have to unlock this afterwards. Mm-hmm. This time they had to, like, save it for a patch, because, you know, that they were already at a point where it's like, look, man, we're going to change this thing out now. But the thing is It's definitely not the end of Sora's story, but whether or not he's going to be able to reconnect with all the old Disney stuff is not sure. But God, I want to talk about it, but I really don't want to spoil it.
Yeah,
probably a good instinct.
Don't spoil it.
But you know, the game was just a lot of fun getting there, and surprisingly, not super convoluted. Pretty much all of the major plot lines ended effectively, and where all the loose ends were tied up. Well, most of them, anyway. Because they still got to save some for Kingdom Hearts 4. And the, like, 80 or something spinoffs that'll be coming from that.
Yeah. Right. Kingdom Hearts 3.1, 3.2, 3.5, UHD remix.
Yeah. I will, however, say this.
Got to have a few titles in there that just sounded like a four-year-old that is just expanding his vocabulary.
Yeah, pretty much. But I will say this. Remember how I talked about how before you start the Toy Story part of the world, there is like an advertising that, you know, Ham and Rex and the others are watching on Andy's TV for a game called Verum Rex?
Yeah.
Remember what I said, how it was basically sort of a retooled
Versus 13
version of the concept trailer for what was going to be Versus 13. Yeah, let's just say that if the game ending of the game is any concern, he is going to use the material from that concept trailer come hell or high water in the next game.
Huh.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll be the Yozora.
Also, yeah. Also, because it's the only other major IP that his team has created besides Kingdom Hearts, there's also going to be a The World Ends With You crossover. Which, I mean, they already did that kind of in Dream Drop Distance when they had some of the main characters from that series come over into, I think it was Traverse Town or Twilight Town. But, you know, looks like part of the next game is going to take place in Shibuya. Hmm. So that's that. So that's that. That's done. Weirdly bittersweet, but it was good. So since I finished that, I went ahead and got a copy of Metro Exodus. I got it loading on my PS4 right now. And I'll be getting ready to play that. That's going to be a lot of fun. Pretty much other than that, I've just been sort of indulging in Netflix weirdness. There's this documentary. If you've been paying attention, there's this documentary that recently started making the rounds on the internet that is on Netflix. It's a movie that originally came out in 2017, but it's just now, like, because they retitled it and released on Netflix, suddenly everybody's watching. It's a documentary. It's called Abducted in Plain Sight.
No, I haven't heard of that one.
Okay. So basically the story is, and again, this is a documentary. It's all true. Way back in the 1970s in, I can't remember if it's in Idaho. Yeah, it's in Idaho. There's this family called, and, you know, they're a good Mormon family out in Idaho. And sometime in the early 70s, a family moves in that come next to them called the Birchtolds. Birchtolds. Yeah, I think that's how you pronounce it. The Birchtolds. And the father of this family, because basically it was one of those families that was almost exactly identical to the Brobergs, because they were, you know, it was a mom, a dad, and, you know, like two sisters and a brother. So almost like a mirror image of the Broberg. And then they start noticing that Robert Birchtold, the father of the patriarch of the Birchtold family, starts having this unusual interest in the Broberg's 12-year-old daughter, Jan. And I know you're thinking, so is this going to be like another one of those pedophile sex abuse documentaries? It goes into unbelievably weird territory. So the first thing you're going to notice by the time you get halfway through this documentary is how unbelievably naive the Broberg families are. Because the Broberg family is. Because, okay, so obviously, okay, like, okay, Teresa, you're a mom.
Mm-hmm.
If you had a neighbor who showed an unusually strong interest in your 10-year-old son, how would you react?
Oh, yeah, no, that you go on high alert and you keep him away, you keep him away, you keep him away.
Yeah, no, the Broilbergs do the exact opposite of that. They invite him into his home. They let the kids sleep over at his house.
Is he like their preacher or something?
Nope, he's just a neighbor and a fellow Mormon, so.
That's perfectly normal around here.
Yeah, Patrick, you grew up in the church, so.
Yeah, it deeply Mormon Idaho is pretty much the same as deeply Mormon Utah.
Yeah.
There's no concept of stranger danger at all. And there are a lot of.
So basically what happened.
There are a lot of elements that take advantage of that.
Yeah.
And you hear about them more and more.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. So basically what ends up happening is that at one point in 1974, Mr. Birch told he goes up. He goes over to the Broberg's phone. He says, "Hey, I was going to go ride around horses up in Idaho somewhere. I can't remember if it was where it was specifically, but it's somewhere in Idaho." She said, "Would Jan like to come?" And so, being the naive fools they are, he's like, "Well, sure, you can take Jan. She loves horses." And so he puts her in her car, and they drive off, and then he drugs her. And basically hightails it to Mexico.
Okay, that went where I didn't expect.
Oh, it gets much weirder. So Jan Broberg herself is in this documentary. And you know, obviously she's middle aged now, but she tells you part of the story, and she tells you exactly what she says that she woke up in a room that was she now knew it was a room in this dude's mobile home. Because basically after he drove her out of sight and drugged her, he put her in her mobile home and then, you know, basically like took off after that down into Mexico. And she wakes up in this room. It's closed off. You know, it's like wooden paneling. And there's this like audio radio device next to her. And suddenly she starts hearing these gravelly kind of distorted voices of individuals that claim to be aliens, extraterrestrials.
Oh, Jesus, God.
And they tell her that she is part alien and that, you know, her father is not her actual father. And she says that because of the way things are going out in our planet, we need you to have a child with the chosen one, and we need you to do it soon, before the age of 16. Because if you don't, we will end up having to take your sister in order to fulfill the mission. Take a wild guess who the chosen one to have this child with is supposed to be.
Mr. Raper.
It's
RV.
Robert Birchtold, yes.
Yeah. There's a place that used to advertise. It was called Raper RV down in the South.
Oh, that doesn't sound dodgy at all.
Right?
Jesus Christ.
So this is, I shouldn't laugh, but.
Yeah. God. But. Here's the thing, because you would think that in another documentary, as insane as all this is, that would be where it ended. Nope, not at all, because eventually what ends up happening is obviously the parents, after a couple of weeks, finally decide, look, there's an issue here. Maybe we need to contact someone. The mother ends up contacting the FBI, but the FBI office there was like closed for the weekend. So they said, there's a weekend office we need you to contact. She doesn't contact them because she says she did not want to make a fuss. Eventually
again,
what happens,
perfectly normal based on around here.
Yeah. And eventually what ends up happening is they do get the FBI involved. The FBI tracks them down to Mexico. With the help of the Mexican police, They arrest him, bring him, extradite him back to the U.S. They bring Jan back, but keep in mind, she's still under the impression that the whole alien thing is true.
Oh, my God.
And the thing is, the aliens actually told her, look, as at some point between then and now, she somehow manages to go to the jail where Mr. Birchall is being held, and he talks to her, and he tells her, look, I know about the alien stuff, and I need to tell you, you can't tell anybody about this, or they will kill you or your family. So until she's 16, she still believes this shit. And in the meantime, so Birchall himself, he is sentenced to, I think it was like 18 months in prison, and the judge got it down to like one or two for like good behavior or something. No, that's not what happened. Because in the documentary, that's not what happened. What happens is that Gail Birchall, Jan, that's Robert's wife, actually goes and he talks to the two parents, and he says, look, I'm going to need you to drop the charges against my husband, or else I'm going to reveal some unfortunate information about you two and my husband. And we find out what that is, which is that basically Robert Birchtold had managed to infiltrate their family to such a point that he had been having an affair with both the father and the mother.
Well, that's a twist.
Yeah. So basically, out of intimidation, Gail gets them to sign an affidavit that says that Robert Birchtold did not, in fact, kidnap their daughter, that she, in fact, went of her own free will.
Uh-huh.
And then, as Mr. Birchtold is seeking court-appointed therapy, God, I can't believe this. He talks about how, like, because apparently because you know how, like, the cycle of sexual abuse usually goes, the abuser was usually unabused at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And, we find out that, yes, Robert Birchtold was sexually abused when he was a child, and, he fixated somewhat on his younger sister because apparently both of his parents had abandoned him at a young age, and he claims that that was the reason he fixated so much on Jan. So he goes to the father, and he tells him, look, I'm seeking therapy now, and I want to get better, but I need you to let you to know that every couple of days I'm going to need to, in order to get over my obsession with my younger sister, I'm going to need to sleep in the same bed as your daughters while I listen to my therapy tapes. And this goes on for a couple of months.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm.
I can't even. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just gonna end it right there. a lot wow. more happens because I want you to actually watch it. Because
I have to now.
Tell me that this guy is already dead.
Oh, Birchtold. Oh yeah, he killed himself a few years ago.
Okay, good. So I don't have to go kill him.
No. He's been dead since I think 2008.
Okay.
That's like
but Jan and parents
story.
Yeah, so Jan is still very much, her parents are very much involved in the documentary. They're to their credit, they are very honest, almost to a fault, and they openly admit how dumb they were, and they show a lot of guilt, but...
And the naivety is part of the culture.
Yeah, it gets worse, too, because there's a point where you also find out that apparently Birchtold had been reprimanded by a church elder for this same kind of shit before he moved next to the Broberg.
And of course the church elder didn't say anything to the authorities.
No.
Because
no, he kept it completely hidden.
Yep. God damn it.
How did I know that?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm pretty sure we know how you know. It's probably systematic.
Yep.
Yeah.
You could
systemic.
You could really
wrong word.
You could really, attach the whole Elizabeth Smart incident to this too, because
you can.
Yep. Same thing. Straight-laced Mormon family. Brian David Mitchell did yard work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought nothing of it. Because that's just how it is here.
Yeah. Like, people talk about, like, you know, it's like the good old days where nobody locked their doors at night. Well,
that's because they were letting the criminals right in through the front door.
Yep. All right. Okay, so moving on from there. We got anything else we want to add before we move on?
No, I'm good.
All right. All right. Well, then, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And today I want to take you back to the days of the Great Depression, considering we may be on the cusp of another one any day now.
Don't say that. It's so scary.
Well, okay, so 1930s, Great Depression. Everything's shit. You know, the can't get a job. If you have a job, the pay sucks. You know, everybody's done a run on the bank. The market's crashed. Hitler's rising in Germany. Mussolini is ruling Italy. There's currently a civil war going on in Spain between the nationalists and the Republicans that Francisco Franco will eventually win and will remain dictator of Spain until the 1970s. But I want to take you over to North America, because as what happens whenever a major economic or cultural or, you know, political or major downturn and just overall panic happens, all of a sudden you get all these weird groups and individuals and stuff, cranks and fanatics and oddballs of all kinds who, you know, start showing up claiming that they have the cure for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and keep in mind that if you lived in the Great Depression, you're far more susceptible to this kind of shit, because I mean, things got so bad in the U.S. that people were actually selling their children. Like, that's how bad it actually got when it was at its worst.
That's some third world shit.
Yeah. And so obviously you had a bunch of political stuff coming out. Obviously, you know, you'd have Roosevelt coming about with the New Deal that would sort of help stabilize things a bit more until the Second World War began. And of course you've got political groups that start showing up from all over the political spectrum. Over on the right, you had groups like the Liberty Lobby, the Silver Legion, the Friends of the New Germany, aka the German American Bund. They're the ones who had that infamous Nazi rally at Madison Square Garden, which, if you've seen that short documentary A Night at the Garden on YouTube, that's what that's about. You know, groups like that. And then on the left, of course, you had the Communist Party USA, which was, you know, taking orders directly from Moscow at that time because Stalin was in charge. And to their credit, they were actually one of the earliest organizations in the United States to be militantly pro-racial equality at the time. So, and, you know, they set up a good social welfare system for people that desperately needed it. So, as you can imagine, at the time, they were at the height. They had over a million members. But there was another group that showed up in the Great Depression right around this time. They were actually pretty popular for a couple of years. And they actually had, like, both major American and Canadian support. It was an organization, a group, called the Technocracy Movement. Now, have you guys ever heard the phrase technocracy before?
No.
What about technocrat?
Yeah.
Okay. Technocracy is basically a political ideology that says that in order to create maximum social good, there needs to be no more politicians or war profiteers or anything, and just replace it all with engineers and experts running the show. And so, yeah, if you're thinking it's like, yeah, that you can, okay, keep in mind, remember, this is the 1930s. This was shortly after the Progressive Era, when people thought that, you know, science and planning would solve all our problems. Of course, it let a lot of pseudoscience bullshit enter in it. It's also where stuff like eugenics and scientific racism came about.
Yep.
And prohibition, all this stuff. But the idea that like a bunch of experts at the top could fix everything was still very much a vogue idea at the time. And so along comes the technocrats. So what was their essential, their essential plan? What did they plan on doing? Well, basically what they wanted to do is they wanted to replace all of money with a degree of energy. They had a name for it. It was called the ERG, I think it was, the centimeter gram second unit of energy. They were going to basically move stuff around so that they could put, in their view, put all of the productive forces organized in such a way so that plenty of goods and services can be offered to all with a minimum amount of work. And, some of their ideas did have like a solid basis. They were one of the precursors of the idea of a 4-hour workday.
Mm.
They actually had what they called the technocratic calendar, which would basically give every person would be a cycle of 4 consecutive workdays, 4 hours a day, followed by 3 days off. And it would basically till and sort of go and switch as it went off. So like here's a example of what a technocracy calendar looked like here. Amongst other things, they called technocracy the science of social engineering, the scientific operation of the entire social mechanism to produce and distribute goods and services to the entire population of this continent. By the way, one of the things they wanted to do is unite both the United States, Canada, and Mexico into a single mega country called the North American Technate.
Okay.
They said, okay, so like this is straight from like their manifesto. There will be no place for politics or politicians, finance or financiers, rackets or racketeers. Technocracy states that this method of operating the North American continent is now mandatory because we have passed from a state of actual scarcity into the present status of potential abundance, in which we are now held to an artificial scarcity proved upon us in order to continue a price system which can distribute goods only by means of a medium of exchange.
Technocracy called it.
Technocracy states that price and abundance are incompatible. The greater the abundance, the smaller the price. In a real abundance, there can be no price at all. Only by abandoning the interfering price control and substituting a scientific method of production and distribution can an abundance be achieved. Technocracy will distribute by means of a certification of distribution available to every citizen from birth to death. The technate will encompass the entire American continent from Panama to the North Pole because the natural resources and the natural boundary of this era make it an independent, self-sustaining geographical unit. Now, did you catch some of the issues in there? The part where they talked about scientific method of production?
Mm-hmm.
Also known as a planned economy.
How did they propose doing that? Because
that's kind of part of the downfall of this movement is they completely swore off any political campaigning or revolution.
So they basically rolled over.
Yeah, basically. It also didn't help that they're
here's our idea. We'll just go fuck ourselves now.
Yeah. Well, it also doesn't help that like one of their big issues like was their imaging, because they had a tendency to like when they held rallies to like be in like unified gray suits and gray cars, all bearing with their leader wearing this red and gray cape with that monad symbol that you see in Link there blazed on it. Gee, what does that remind you of?
Oh, it reminds me.
Remember,
you
this
a lot.
Is the mid-30s.
Nope.
Yeah, they should have done like pink and purple, maybe. I don't know. anything not communist.
Nope.
Well, actually, I was going to say Nazi, but.
Oh, 30s.
Well, Yeah.
Okay.
But
I'm still
waiting. In case you're curious, yes, Technocracy Inc., which is the major like organizational hub of this movement, still exists.
Huh.
Still exists. It has a newsletter. It has a website. They still hold meetings.
Huh.
Yeah. In fact, you can, in that link, they've got it, their organization linked to at the bottom of that Wikipedia article. Yeah, and
there's some folks who still vehemently believe in this.
Yeah. There's also another problem, which is that, and I don't know how many of you guys know any engineers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You ever noticed how engineers are not only like really full of themselves, but they're also extremely susceptible to crankery?
They are. They
bullshit.
Think in black and white. They don't think in gray.
Yeah. Well, now imagine that, but imagine those people being the indisputed rulers of the world.
You know, I could go ahead and skip on that. I don't
know.
And
that's why technocracy doesn't work.
Right? I don't know that they're going to be better than politicians.
No. I just thought it was because they fucked off after they presented their ideas.
Yeah. Also, yeah, well, because did you mention how I said there was no place for politics or politicians? Yeah, there's no democracy in a technocracy either.
Yeah.
It's literally a straight dictatorship by experts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say that some of their ideas didn't necessarily bad. Like I said, the 4-day, 4-hour workday plan they had is actually pretty solid.
Yeah, and it sounds like, you know, not universal income, but similar.
Yeah.
They were saying birth to be
strong
a cradle
welfare.
To death.
Yeah. They also had like a, you know, obviously as well as like the price and abundance thing was also pretty on point. But to be honest, that isn't really original of them because Marx and Engels were talking about that shit back in the 1800s. So, but anyway.
That sounds like the episode of The Simpsons where Mensa takes over the town.
That's basically what it is, yeah.
I gotta see
like,
that
we're the smartest people, so we can obviously run everything.
Yeah, no, no.
Everything's on fire by the end of it.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. That's why you have to have a degree of democracy in any state, because you need a certain degree of ideas clashing and competing with each other, because that's the only way you're going to be able to find some degree of middle ground to agree on.
Well, and you also need the crooks, because they could smell their own kind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bullshitters know when they're being bullshitted.
Yeah, that's the price of democracy, but hey, it's one we got to be willing to pay, because the alternative kind of sucks.
You're not kidding, dude.
All right. So, with that out of the way, it is now time to start the show proper. As always, we have to start with our asshole of the week.
No,
you know who it is.
God
okay.
Damn.
So,
it sort of crosses over with dumbass of the week, too.
All right. So, I mean, let's be honest. We all kind of saw this coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he had been for a while.
Yeah,
I called it.
Well, it was for a while, and then it was very public for a couple of weeks, especially as the shutdown was nearing its end.
Yep.
But he signed the spending bill today, and then immediately turned around and declared a national emergency.
Mm-hmm.
Notice that I said emergency instead of emergency, because, yeah.
It's a speech. Wah. It's something he doesn't have.
Mm-hmm. All right, who wants to get us started on this? Teresa, I have a feeling you have some things to say.
You know, he has flat out admitted that he's fabricated this in order to get the money.
And that's going to do the whole thing in.
It might, but what if it doesn't? What if the courts side with him?
That's if it doesn't, then that's the really delicious part, because once you cross that line, once you set that precedent, we're less than 2 years away from a Democratic president.
Yeah.
What can we get out of this? If that's a national emergency, healthcare is a national emergency. If that's a national emergency, climate change is a national emergency. You know?
That's an actual emergency. The opioid crisis.
Yeah.
That's an emergency.
We can take this and
you want to
drive it straight over him.
Mm-hmm.
And
more than likely, The courts are not going to agree with him because there is ample precedent against this. The last big one was with FDR. For those who don't know, because during the Great Depression, he was trying to get some extra money into his New Deal programs that weren't approved of by Congress. So he wanted to declare a national emergency, and the courts turned it down. So then he tried to pack the courts, which didn't go well. So, yeah, there's ample precedent against him. So, also, pretty much all of the opposition have basically at once told him see you in court, because that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I know the ACLU's sued him, probably just a few other groups.
Yeah.
So, what's the precedent when the actual president of the United States gets sued? Because I can't see us not footing the bill for this.
Well, see, here's the thing. It won't be... Yeah, well, it won't be a monetary thing to begin with, because, you know, this is the government against another part of the government. You know, they're just going to be using our regular taxpayer dollars as it is.
They're suing for the resolution of the conflict.
Yeah. Okay. So we're not going to be on hold for any cash here.
Yeah, they're going to be working their 9 to 5 no matter what they're working on, I suppose.
Yeah. Also, remember, we're not going to have a government shutdown either. So
Yeah,
that ship sailed.
Goddamn.
But
yeah.
So keep in mind, though, that theoretically he has the power to, because it, you know, and again, if this emergency order goes through, which again, still up in the air, it basically gives him the ability to seize and or withhold funding for any person he wants to. And if you remember, one of the ways he wanted to get money for the wall was to take it from the emergency funds for California and Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And you remember the Million Man March?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It might be time for a second one.
You're not wrong.
I enjoy the occasional sequel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's the old Thomas Jefferson quote about the Tree of Liberty and needing to be fed by such and such. But,
such and such.
I like that.
But, yeah. But this also comes on the cusp of we now hearing that apparently the Mueller team has actually questioned Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Oh.
Yeah.
That had to be an interesting interview.
Yeah. Let's see, what else? Because there's some other stuff along with this, too. Mueller recommends up to 24 years for Paul Manafort. Let's see. The new filing from Mueller connects Roger Stone directly to WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks? Yeah.
WikiLeaks.
let's see. But Mueller team, and yeah, like you said, ACLU is going to sue over this. And the judge that's trying Roger Stone and his lawyers, the judge has hit them with a gag order.
Oh boy.
So.
Yeah. So. As was quoted in my book, the fecal matter has hit the atmospheric impeller.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, our little Nazi problem that we've got in this country, that could be a national emergency. Just putting that out there.
Yep, that too.
Oh yeah, here's another bit of funny news. So, you guys know who Boris Johnson is? Mm-hmm. He's the mayor of London.
Yeah. That clown.
Kind of a dipshit.
Yeah.
So you know how Boris Johnson is pro-Brexit?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you know his sister is anti-Brexit?
Oh, how's that working for him?
Well, she went on Sky News last night, and she Okay, so during the craziness that is the Brexit talks, a bunch of protesters, you know, against Brexit have done stuff, and one of them is Dr. Victoria Bateman, aka the Naked Brexit Protester.
Oh.
Hmm.
Yeah, so Rachel Johnson, Boris's sister, she went on Sky News and took her top off and showed off the girls just so people would hear what she had to say about Brexit.
Okay.
Alrighty then.
Well,
we're officially in Crazy Town, folks. We are in the crazy timeline now.
She still has a ways to go to beat her brother, though.
You know what? Brothers are a pain in the ass sometimes, and sometimes they need to be shown off or shown up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
All right.
No, you see the thing that Theresa May was
what did Tom
about?
Do?
Tom?
Is it story time?
It's done anything today.
All right.
Just had to make sure.
Did you see the thing with Theresa May? She's talking about some real weird thing. I don't know how the topic came up, but she was talking about jam.
Yeah.
And saying that when it gets moldy, she just scoops the mold off and uses the jelly.
That somehow became just the best metaphor for what Brexit has been doing.
Yeah, I saw somebody basically showing a doctor saying, like, depending on what kind of mold that is, that could kill you.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that'd be so a fitting Brexit. Metaphor for Brexit as the prime minister shits herself to death.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
All right, so moving on from that, on to our hero of the week. And honestly, we had a handful to involve. AOC did her little ARP role-playing game when she was at the committee, finding out, you know, like, I'm going to be the bad guy and find out how much I can get away with our campaign finance laws.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
And then, of course, there's Representative Ilhan Omar, who
yes.
You may remember she came out and publicly called out AIPAC and mainstream media and mainstream politicians did everything they could to kill her political career then and there.
And failed.
And so now that taboo is officially broken.
Was it the whole thing where she's anti-Israel, so people are like, oh, she's anti-Semitic?
No. By the way, the district she's from is also like one of the most strongly, as like one of the bigger Jewish populations in the country. Yeah. So
it's like, Israel and Jews are not the same thing.
Yeah, if that was the case, then, you know, they wouldn't be taking part in various ethnic cleansing policies to try and do away with the Ethiopian Jewish population in Israel right now.
But my God, do they like to try and pretend that they're inseparable?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But
it'd be like if you know, people tried to say shit on the president, like, stop shooting on Americans. Like, no, that's the president.
Yeah.
He's not, the government is not the people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, exclusively,
the
like,
the government is not
that...
the people, the NRA is not the Second Amendment, and AIPAC is not Israel.
No.
Yeah, like,
especially,
is
this especially
Judaism.
Is very, that whole line of questioning is especially problematic when you consider the fact that there are currently, within Israel itself, several organizations and individuals who are actively fighting to stop these policies. Israel is not a monolith. It never has been.
Yeah.
And for the record, Likud, the political party, and Netanyahu, he's not very well liked in Israel.
Wonder why.
Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah, like when Conan does his remotes in other countries and talks mm-hmm. about Trump with them, like those people tend to go out of their way to say, you know, we don't hate the American people. We love them.
Yeah.
We hate your president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was like, well, we got one thing in common, at least.
Yeah.
Even the Ayatollah straight up said that.
Yeah.
Damn.
Nicolas Maduro has said the same thing. But anyway. So moving on from there, we're going to go to our hero of the week. So our hero of the week for this week is the Olympic Committee for 2020, because they have announced that for the Olympics in Tokyo in 2020, they will be making all of the medals from recycled plastic.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, so they are making them out of old smartphones and laptops and such.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're aiming to collect 30.3 kilograms of gold, 4,100 kilograms of silver, and 2,700 kilograms of bronze.
Yeah. And then basically cut that with plastic. So
yeah, and they're on course to reach those targets in March. They reached the target for bronze last June. They're 90% of gold and 85% of silver by October. And yeah, they'll release the designs later this year. But yeah, it's a pretty cool way of reusing old electronics or something cool. Yeah.
That's really nice.
Ending up in landfills.
Yeah, yeah. And it's going to be for the Olympics and the Paralympics.
That's a lot of medals.
Yeah, I guess for the Rio Olympics in 2016, about 30% of the silver and bronze came from recycled materials.
All right.
That's cool. It's only going to increase as these resources become more scarce.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, then, with that out of the way, it is now time to move on to the show proper, the proper show proper. And we have to start with the 2020 race, because, by God, they will not let us forget about it for even 1 second.
Nor should we.
Yeah, I guess so.
I would say I would agree with you, but I also think that there is a limit.
Yeah, and we're kind of at the point where it's just like everybody's putting their name in the hat.
Yeah.
And this is going to be stretching for a little while now.
Well, considering who they're going up against, everybody thinks they got a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is true.
Right.
And one of these people is probably already over.
Yeah. But anyway, so first things first, Senator Elizabeth Warren officially joined the race, basically confirming something we all kind of figured was going to happen for the last couple months.
Yeah.
And pretty quickly, Trump showed his ass.
Of course he did.
With this, he made a, when he tweeted about this, made a trail reference. A trail of tears.
Oh, what a classy motherfucker.
Yep.
God.
Although whether or not he actually wrote that, keep in mind he has people who help him write some of these tweets, so.
That's even worse.
Yeah.
That's not better.
People are like, oh, is he too stupid to know what the Trail of Tears is? Like, he's a huge fan of Andrew Jackson. If he doesn't know what it is, then he's an even bigger idiot.
Yeah. So, let's see. Other than that, oh, yes. Senator Amy Klobuchar. She actually announced her entry in the middle of a blizzard.
Well.
Yeah, to which Trump also showed his ass. It's like, see, how can it be snowing if it's global warming?
Because climate is weather, don't you know?
He doesn't know that. He's an old man.
He has to yell at clouds.
Yeah.
Also
delusional at this point.
Yeah.
No, he was delusional long ago.
And she's from Minnesota. And she might be one of the early people getting pushed out. Because she's one of the more milquetoast people that have announced so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to get snapped out fast.
And then she's also infamous for being very abusive to her staff.
Yes. That, in fact, so much so it kind of became a meme.
Yeah. It's like, oh, hey, you're a shitty person, and nobody really knows what your policies are.
Yeah. So, it's too new. The other big kind of one of the other big stories, and it's funny that this one, like his death was actually kind of announced, but it took a couple of days before it could be confirmed. Unless you're into politics or you're 50 or older, you probably have not heard of this guy. But let's be honest, the effect he's had on American politics is enormous and not for the better. Lyndon LaRouche passed away this week at the age of 96. Now, who was Lyndon LaRouche? Well, where do I begin? Because he was a Okay, so let me put it this way. Lennon LaRouche actually got his start back in the 1960s and 70s when he was part of the New Left. Some of you may remember an organization back then called Students for a Democratic Society. That was like a major organization back then. He was also at one point a member of the Spartacist League, which is like a weird sort of Trotskyist offshoot that was like that. They're infamous these days for supporting NAMBLA and Roman Polanski, and also
Jesus Christ,
having like weird posters that say shit that is like loaded in Trot speak, saying shit like, you know, defend the right of the North Korean deformed worker state to own nuclear weapons.
Oh,
you know, stuff
God.
Like that.
Wow.
Yeah, they're one of those groups.
well, we just have so much use for them, don't we?
Yeah, they're still around, by the way. And they still show up at the rallies. You'll see them, and they're kind of easy to spot out of a crowd. So, anyway, right around 1968, when the student strike at Columbia University broke out, he tried to form a organization called the Democratic Congress of Labor Committees to sort of muscle his way into basically governing the entirety of the Students for a Democratic Society. This doesn't really help. Yeah, remember at the time that at that point, the SDS was extremely fractured at that point. There was a bunch of different wings of it. There was like one Maoist wing called the Progressive Labor Party. There was another Maoist wing that was opposed to the Progressive Labor Party that would eventually become the Weather Underground. There were the old Social Democrats parts of the SDS who weren't happy with all of the Maoists subtly showing up in their organization. There was an anarchist faction. The White Panther Party, which was a group of individuals who wanted to who wanted to start like a rainbow coalition with the Black Panthers. And then in comes LaRouche, who basically starts up like a hardline political stance. He started teaching like courses at a free university in New York on Marxism and other subjects. Around this point, he started coming up with his idea, because here's the thing you got to know about LaRouche. If you want to know what LaRouche's politics were, it was this. LaRouche was not right wing or left wing. He was LaRouche wing.
Oh,
he had
boy.
These absolute delusions of grandeur that he was the only person on earth who could save the world, and he had to get in power to do this by any means necessary. And this is where it all starts. Because after
how can that not go badly?
Because after the Students for a Democratic Society essentially broke down, LaRouche had his large group of followers that had been his students from a young age. So he comes up with this idea is, okay, so 73 rolls around, and he starts ordering all of his followers to start physically attacking meetings of the Communist Party USA because he wanted to establish, quote, hegemony over the U.S. left and at the time. Then, at some point, he started subjecting his followers to, quote-unquote, deprogramming sessions because he was convinced that only his political ideology could actually fix them, cure them of things like erectile dysfunction, cuckoldry in their marriages, homosexual leanings. He also started claiming that he was being targeted for assassination. So already just a bit of lunacy, right?
Yeah, he sounds like a... Well, it sounds like he fit right in right about now, but anyway.
Oh, it gets worse. So in 1976, he decided to run for president on the U.S. Labor Party ticket. And he started putting out these posters and these like late night infomercial stuff where he would start claiming that unless the U.S. Labor Party was elected, then Jimmy Carter would start thermonuclear war with the Soviets in 1978.
Based on?
His own delusions.
Apparently.
Then around 1978...
He thought Carter was going to drop the bomb.
Yeah. Then in 1978, he got word that a certain organization that I previously mentioned called the Liberty Lobby had started noticing some of his materials, his campaign materials, which had a very conspiratorial overtone. especially involving his criticisms of the Trilateral Commission, which, if you know anything about conspiracy shit, that's like the one of the big three. The other is the Bilderberg Group and the Council on Foreign Relations. Then they started promoting LaRouche's publications to their audience while criticizing it for not identifying what they thought was the real source of the conspiracy. Take a wild guess who the Liberty Lobby thought was the actual source of the conspiracy. Starts with a J and rhymes with blues.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he sensed a new potential source of converts, so he started adding in even more of the conspiracy theory shit with a more extreme right and, yes, anti-Semitic overtone.
Wow.
Oh, it gets worse. So in 1980, he made the first of several runs for president in the Democratic primaries, which is something he would keep doing for pretty much the rest of his life. He basically would try – he was one of the most infamous perennial candidates in American history. He would build he would try and piggyback on the Democratic primaries, who, if you haven't guessed by now, thought he was a lunatic. And then he also started saying some other weird shit. Like, for example, he believed that the counterculture was a conspiracy to enact the drug trade. He was anti-environmentalist. He was like hardcore on nuclear power. In fact, he blamed the 1979 Iranian Revolution on environmentalists. He started building ties with groups like the Nation of Islam, the Ku Klux Klan, Council on Racial Equality, or CORE, which used to be a major part of the civil rights movement back in the day. Then in the 80s, of course, you may know, Ronald Reagan was elected president. So he tried to get ties to the Reagan White House, and he is credited for being the guy who got the idea of the Strategic Defense Initiative into Ronald's head, also known as the Star Wars program.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can blame that for him. Blame him for that, yeah. But probably the biggest amount of any real effect he would have for a long time came in the mid-80s. So what was a massive crisis that showed up in the 80s?
The Cuban Missile Crisis?
No, more of a medical crisis.
HIV.
Oh. HIV/AIDS.
Yeah.
So LaRouche got it in his idea that HIV could be spread through blood, through like insects and open and casual contact. So he founded a front group called PANIC, or the Prevent AIDS Now Initiative Committee, which got a measure on the ballot in California in 1986 that would have made it excuse me, that would have made it required that all people diagnosed with HIV would have to go into quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've talked to people who were in the LGBT community in California around this time period, and let's just say that that was a very scary time. Because,
yeah, I'm sure they were fucking petrified.
Yeah, no. Because...
it's like being gay in Indiana.
Mm-hmm. So, as you're probably wondering right now, okay, so all this shit happens, and that's pretty much like the end of his major effect on politics at that point. Well, not really, because you see, as the internet age dawned in the 90s, his fanatics and followers started capitalizing on the reach that the internet had. And so they went international. And this is where, like, all the major ideas that LaRouche had of, like, his sort of grand unified conspiracy theory and his personal view of, like, what had to be done finally shows itself. So, are you ready for what he wanted to do?
What did this ass clown want to do?
Okay, so first thing you need to know is Lyndon LaRouche believed that the British royal family still controlled most of the world.
Alrighty then.
He believed that Queen Elizabeth was a major player in the drug trade. Believed that the Beatles was actually a KGB-influenced mind control program. Believed that Harry Potter and Pokemon were cults to reprogram children's brains to commit acts of violence.
One of those.
he believed just about everything inane and ridiculous that ever was presented to mankind, I think, at this point.
And there's a lot more to it that goes past that. Basically, he thought that they were pretty much all the major power players were in the pocket of the British. Everyone from Ronald Reagan to Kissinger. So here's basically what his main plan was. This is what he wanted to do. First, he wanted to build a nuclear powered desalinization plant off the California coast. He wanted to use tactical nukes to build a canal across the continent of Africa to solve the world's water crisis.
I'm not no.
Step three, profit.
Yeah, right.
He essentially wanted to militarize all corners of society, wanted to expel the British influence upon Western culture. He wanted to build a high-speed maglev rail from Alaska to Siberia. And he thought that Henry Kissinger, the Anti-Defamation League, the Queen of England, Greenpeace, and the World Wildlife Fund were all agents of and went everywhere from the royal family, the KGB, and eventually international Satanism, which controls the drug trade.
Well, I mean, you just gotta go big or go home, right?
He also believed in cultivating a new man, or people he called golden souls, which is a which is a term borrowed from Plato. He was really into ancient Greece, and he accused his enemies of being "quote unquote" neo Romans. But basically, the common thread in all of this that started way back in the '60s and continued until his dying day was this doomsday scenario in which finance capital was about to bring a worldwide economic collapse or a new dark age, in his terms, unless his leadership and his economic proposals were adopted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, son of a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Did we mention, by the way, that this guy was very good friends with both Roger Stone and Alex Jones?
Shocking.
Just can't imagine how
that
explains could be.
A whole lot.
And if you look through the... And you can see a heavily influence on Glenn Beck as well. You got Lyndon LaRouche to thank for that. Oh, yeah, by the way, you remember around the time the Tea Party started to become a thing and, you know, people were talking about beginning Obamacare and stuff, and you started seeing those placards with Obama with a Hitler mustache?
Oh,
yeah, that was LaRoucheites. Yeah, okay. LaRoucheites.
Wow.
And he's dead now, so hell stinks more.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah. Well, that was a bonus random factoid for the evening.
Well, I had to go in-depth on that one because...
It was worth discussing.
Yeah. By the way, a lot of his like infomercial shit is still on YouTube now. So if you want a daily dose of craziness, you can watch it where he moves his head around and says all this crazy shit in the most deadpan... You know, monotone voice.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. And Al Franken had a long run pretending to be this guy on SNL.
That's probably where I know that name from. Yeah. Either that or The Simpsons.
Yeah, he's mentioned a couple times in The Simpsons. Yeah. But anyway.
No idea what he is or who he is. Yeah. Had a funny name.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, in other news, over in Arizona, a NASA astronaut, retired astronaut, Mark Kelly, is going to be running for McCain's Senate seat.
You know,
I'm totally okay
is?
With this.
Mm-hmm.
His wife is Gabby Giffords.
Yep.
If you remember, she got shot in the head during a rally. So, yeah, he not only knows a lot about the risks that you take as a politician, but also... a lot of problem solving as an astronaut, a pilot in the Navy, an engineer and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, best of luck to him.
Yeah.
McCain, next.
Well, yeah, I don't. McCain's seat is wide open, so.
Yeah. All right, next. Insects. A bunch of insects may be going extinct within the next century at the current rate of decline. Keep in mind, may go extinct.
Yeah, yeah. We have to keep stressing that. They will if we don't do anything. If we do, we can prevent these things from happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
It does add to the list of all kinds of shit that we need to fix, though.
Well, you can only do one thing at a time. So
yeah.
And it's like if you're thinking like, oh, what good are insects for? It's like a lot of those plants out there, flowers, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're pollinated by insects.
Yeah, we don't eat without them.
Yeah. Yeah. At least not yet. At least until we can't create synthetic honey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or synthetic bugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Which they're working on.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And synthetic meat, too, which we're also pretty far into creating now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if we can get some good fake burgers without all the cow farts, that'll be
that's
good for
pretty much
everybody.
It. We got it made.
Yeah. Well, actually, I've tried the Impossible Burger.
Yeah.
It's actually really good.
Yeah. There was actually a person from, I think it was Greenpeace, who had one of the synthetically made foie gras.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it was really good. So, totally possible.
Yep.
Can be done.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
We live in that. Now, so anyway, next up, Mitch McConnell, aka Yertle the Turtle, has said that he's going to allow a vote on the Green New Deal. Now, remember, we talked about the Green New Deal last week, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, this is a resolution, not an actual bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to make that clear, because there's always going to be that one asshole.
Mm. Other people are like, oh, they're going to outlaw flying too. Hawaii. It's like, no, they're not.
No, no.
Still going to be able to get to Hawaii and Alaska and all that.
Yeah.
Just going to make it better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because our infrastructure sucks and it's needed an overhaul for over 50 years now. But anyway.
It's been a good week to reinforce that stuff. Because it's been getting cold, snowing, raining, warming back up, getting cold again, warming back up, cold again.
Well, freaking Lakeshore Drive dropped 5 inches, and they had to bring in portable jacks to jack it up. It does a number on our infrastructure.
Yeah.
You can't have a double-decker road drop 5 inches.
Nope.
No, that's problematic.
I was going to get food, and I decided to take the shortcut. It's a road with probably at least 100 potholes on it. I was pretty sure my car was going to fall apart by the end. So I'm just...
Yeah.
I have to like really straddle the line in the middle of the road.
Yeah, every April it's time to get that car realigned.
All they did to fix the potholes was pave half of the road, not peel it off or anything. Just put a new layer on it.
Oh my!
Yeah. And of course, over the past like 6 months, it's worn off big time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like okay, chunk. you guys need to just take the bullet and just redo the whole road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is a ridiculous thing.
Yeah.
I'm just cursing like, my car potentially falling apart by the end of this road.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why I don't go on this road very often.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, so probably has a chance passing in the House, not in the Senate.
No.
No, but that's not the point.
That's not the point. That was never the point. It's just Mitch being Mitch.
Hmm.
Have you seen... SNL's version of Mitch McConnell? It's pretty good. Yeah. I forget who it is that's doing it, but he does a really good job of like trying to accentuate the chin gullet kind of thing.
Anyway.
I think it was during the shutdown. It was like a deal or no deal thing. And he's sitting there hiding behind the suitcase he has.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next up, Russia experimenting with disconnecting from the internet.
Sure.
Yeah.
Do that for the whole country. Save everybody else the problem.
Well, you know, I actually read into this, and it's like what they're basically trying to do is very similar to what China is going to be does already.
Yeah. With
their whole, you know, big firewall.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another thing in there where they're touting resiliency and being able to support a countrywide intranet. So being self in the event of a cyber attack, they don't fall over. I'm not one who's big on government censorship, so I'm not thrilled by this idea for that
mm-hmm.
angle. But for the resiliency part, and yeah, actually, I think that's a pretty damn
good
idea. Yeah. So yeah, so they're apparently in April. They're going to start testing this April 1st, where they're actually going to take it down to get these other routers and stuff in place.
Mm-hmm.
They've already got a their own implementation of the DNS system is already in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So you know they can basically route sites within Russia itself, and yeah, it's. It's interesting.
From a security standpoint, it could be a model for the rest of the world. It's just the censorship aspect of it that mm-hmm. opens it up to too much abuse.
Well, that's what proxies are for.
Yeah. And then you have China along the same lines, who's like, well, they've been doing this kind of stuff for years, but they've actually just recently passed a law that basically allows the government to do spot inspections on security on Chinese companies.
Yep.
And yeah, so we're in an interesting spot where the U.S.'s cyber infrastructure is shit, and you've got these authoritarian countries who are taking steps to bolster theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're fucked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we're all fucked basically. So
yeah, but see, yeah. We need to let the ISPs handle everything because they know how to do what's best for us.
Yeah, oh, sure, yes.
Magic Pie.
Mm.
Look at my oversized Reese's Cup mug. Yeah. I'm an expert on adulting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But as long as proxies still exist and VPNs.
Yeah. Yeah. VPNs are great, except when they're illegal, and that's another whole matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Next up, we said goodbye to the Opportunity Rover. It finally conked out this week.
Yeah, well, it's actually been conked out for several months. This is just the week where NASA just decided to give up.
Yeah.
So they're no longer going to try to reestablish contact. It's just, yep, it's had 14 years of mm-hmm. service over there. So.
Yeah, basically finished its original mission pretty quickly.
Yeah, and then kept going. So.
Like, well, we can do some more stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's sitting there and it's waiting for Mark Watney to find it.
Yep.
So,
yeah. All right. Also, this week we found out that Amazon is dropping its planned headquarters in New York City, and the city rejoiced.
Yeah.
New York pushed back. New York basically did, you know, what New York is going to do and be New York, and Amazon went, "Well, fine. We won't come over there."
And we'll just go to Virginia.
Go home. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this is fine.
Yeah, because
you can't have more than one headquarters, really.
Mm-mm.
They can have all the headquarters. Because plenty of cities line up to give them ridiculous benefits.
Yeah, but a headquarters Salt Lake implies did. Singular.
Yeah.
Can't have more than one.
And the fun thing is, I think people found out, oh yeah, you know what they're, how much taxes they paid? For last year?
Something like, I don't know, something 11%?
Zero.
Zero.
Actually, yeah. They got a credit.
Uh-huh.
From last year.
Huh. They're not the helping government paid those them potholes. To
not pay taxes.
Nope. No,
they're not really helping.
Yeah, they're doing nothing to help with the potholes, with education, with anything. I mean, I paid more taxes than them.
Yeah.
Yeah, we paid more taxes than Amazon.
They're just sitting there taking up space, drinking all our beer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, in a bit of hilarity. Yeah, in a bit of hilarity. President Trump has claimed that Alan Dershowitz, a person I loathe to the very bottom of my soul, He told Trump that the 25th Amendment is apparently unconstitutional, which is obviously bullshit and cancels itself out because an amendment cannot, by definition, be unconstitutional because it's in the Constitution.
The specific quote he has is, trying to use the 25th Amendment to try and circumvent the election is a despicable act of unconstitutional power grabbing, which happens in third world countries. You have to obey the law. This is an attack on our system and Constitution. The 25th Amendment is an attack on our Constitution.
The 25th Amendment, by the way, that's the one where we've talked about it before. It's the one where he's like, look, the dude's not is not doing well. He's a lunatic. We need to get him out ASAP.
Yeah.
That's the 25th
of course
Amendment.
Push back
basically, the
that.
Constitution is an attack on our Constitution.
Yeah.
That is this presidency in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's goddamn clouds.
Yeah, this all came up with Andrew McCabe's book in like 60 Minutes interview. Basically, there were people thinking about the 25th Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, filtered back to Trump, and he gets angry.
Yeah. What? Just...
mm-hmm.
It's like the more of this stuff that happens, the more you just wonder. You know, maybe Elon Musk has it right. Maybe we actually are living in a simulation.
Maybe this is the Matrix.
Yeah, and whoever's running it is just like flipping the knobs,
blatantly trolling
all over the place. Just just messing with us. So, anyways.
Anyway, in other news, remember back when Nike made Colin Kaepernick sort of the face of their new campaign?
Oh yeah.
And the bullshit that came out of that, and the weird hissy fit that a lot of people had by destroying their own.
Very expensive.
Yeah.
And you may remember there was the story about one shoe store in Colorado that was boycotting Nike because of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How'd
well,
that
guess
work
who
out?
Guess who announced that they're going to have to close down?
Yeah,
it turns out if you're running a shoe store where you're not stocking any Nike products, it's a hard sell.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the biggest shoemaker in the world.
Yeah, probably.
Well, if you're not stocking Nike stuff, aren't you like cutting out like 90% of your inventory?
Yeah, as he says here, being a sports store without Nike is like being a gas station without gas.
The only people I know of that have never owned Nikes were my grandparents from the 30s. Everybody else. Everybody. I mean, it's universal. Yeah. Even down to the 6-week-old baby. They got a fucking pair of Nikes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this. ruin your own business to own the libs.
Mm-hmm.
As he says here,
I wonder if they're tired of winning yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was never about property to me. This was about principle. Martin said while he was in his store preparing to shut it down. He said the boycott was about the principle over profit. You know, the lost revenue played a role in his decision to close the store. He's absolutely glad he did it. You don't trample over the men who have given Colin Kaepernick and me the right to free speech.
Yeah.
Well, Colin Kaepernick is still going, and you're shutting down your store.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Apparently, turns out there's more supporters of Kaepernick than you thought there were, buddy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or you just made a really stupid decision to not carry one of the. Pretty much the major shoe brand in your store.
Yeah.
Idiot.
Anyway. Unfortunately, we do have some sad news. There was another mass shooting today. This one happened close to home. Teresa?
Yeah, it did. I guess some guy, they don't know why, he went and shot up his workplace in the outskirts of a Chicago suburb. And, I think there's 6 people dead, including him, and many officers wounded. But nobody seems to know why he did what he did. He worked at some manufacturing plant. And last I heard, the police have his apartment taped off, and they're trying to figure out why this even happened. Well, it happened because he had access to a lot of guns.
Yeah.
So, yeah, apparently somebody... who worked there said that another coworker came running out of the offices area and he was bleeding profusely and said, somebody's firing, somebody's firing. And the next thing he knows, he sees a guy running out with a laser scope on his pistol firing at people. So.
Mm-hmm.
And again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It keeps happening.
And the people who are supposed to, you know, put through solutions to fix shit like this are basically being as obtuse as they possibly can to ignore the primary issue
paid
here.
Not to pay that much attention.
They are.
Yeah.
They're paid to deflect.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
We'll see if everybody in that business had guns, they would have shot them right away.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So next story we got is out of Russia. It's being overrun by an invasion of polar bears, which I know you're thinking, it's like, wait, that hadn't happened before? But, and apparently climate change is kind of, it's happened, but this is a recent one. And I think climate change is actually to blame for this one, isn't it?
Probably. This happened in Russia's remote Arctic archipelago of Novaya Zemlya.
Mm.
They've had polar bears show up in town before. I guess like in the summer, like some Canadian towns have had like moose just come around and hang out.
Yeah.
Checking out the place. Mm. They had quite a few end up showing up.
Mm.
They say at least 52 polar bears. There are plenty of videos here of, I'm guessing, like security footage. Mm-hmm. They're just like walking into shops, checking things out, doing some shopping. They're on their long trip into town. And they ended up declaring a state of emergency.
See, that's an actual emergency.
Yeah. Efforts to drive out the polar bears from the human habitat have partly paid off. We are chasing the bears away with the tools that we have. Their number is now smaller than 50, but we can't calculate accurately due to the weather.
Hmm.
Because it's Russia in the wintertime.
Yeah.
There's a nice Instagram picture of a dog staring down a polar bear. And they arranged transportation for the safe passage of children to and from kindergartens and of troops to and from military garrisons. Yeah. It's like, as long as you're not doing something stupid, you should be okay. I think they're just there for food.
Mm.
Give them some, give some Cheetos and and let them go.
Mm.
Yeah, Russia has banned killing of polar bears because they're an endangered species. So, they definitely had to shoot down the idea of just taking them out.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, that complicates things.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think it doesn't seem like it's necessarily like a threatening situation.
Mm-hmm. No, it's just weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, maybe be like the olden times, just lay down a line of marshmallows out of town.
Mm-hmm. All right, and then next we got some amazing science news. A new cure for HPV has been found in Mexico. By the way, just for the record, just complete disclosure, the article we've got links to the American Council on Science and Health, which, for those of you don't know, that is a pro-industry lobbying group that is partly funded by Monsanto.
But
what they are talking about here is, in fact, true.
It is. It's sourced in other places as well.
Yeah.
It's just that this one actually talks about the photodynamic therapy that they're using to kill this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fairly non-invasive procedure, which is great. And they tested it on 449 women in Mexico, and they all had HPV. So everyone who had it but had no cervical lesions, the virus was completely eradicated.
Mm-hmm.
So the people who had it and who did have lesions already, it eradicated 64% of the women from having the virus. And then for women who had the lesions, but they didn't have an active infection, the virus was eradicated 57% of the time. And all with no damage to the healthy tissue surrounding. So this is like freaking
That's groundbreaking
amazing.
Shit.
It really is, because HPV, that's really the only vaccine that people should really raise their eyebrows at, because Gardasil has had some reactions. Nothing worth not getting it.
No.
But it's HPV is really a pretty nasty little thing, and it's so prevalent in society. You know, it's almost
I'd
like
say over 30. There's an infection rate is north of 50%.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I think that might even be a little low.
Yeah. Well. That's why I said north of.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So, that's crazy great news. And hopefully we get to hear more about it, and they could get this approved and start treating a lot of people.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. So next up, another science. During a tech summit, the representatives of the National Basketball Association, the NBA, unveiled smart jerseys.
They have this neat thing. It's essentially like I'm guessing it's like a kind of like display that is laid into the fabric. Where essentially, as the commissioner of the NBA, Adam Silver, shows, using an app on his phone, you can change the name and the number on the jersey. To
well,
whatever
what
you
could
want.
Possibly go wrong.
That'd be great.
Wait until a player finds out they got traded this way.
Yeah. So it's not anything that's like going to happen anytime soon. This is like a future tech kind of thing, of like something they might be able to do like by 2038.
Jesus Christ.
If
you thought buying team swag was expensive before,
it's pretty neat tech, like wearable display stuff.
Yeah.
Especially if you're essentially like you're just a fan of the team, there are plenty of teams out there where people get like the jersey of the new draft pick, and then they're a bust, they're terrible, or whatever. You know, like people that might have, I don't know, like OJ Simpson jerseys. It's like, maybe like you can probably go through like tailoring services that'll change out the names or numbers or whatever, if you're lucky. But this is a pretty neat way of like getting around that. You can just change the name and number to whoever you want it to be.
Yeah. Or you could hold on for 20 years and then they're collectible.
Yeah. There's that. Yeah. All right. All right, next up, and now we're into the media entertainment part of the show. We got a trailer for Yesterday.
Yeah, this is a pretty neat movie. So it is essentially features a guy who kind of is a Beatles cover band guy. And for whatever reason, the next day, the power goes out around the world.
Uh-huh.
And comes to realize that all
he's the only
the
person
Beatles,
who remembers the Beatles.
Yeah, has disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, he's playing Yesterday for his family, and they're like, oh, "That's an amazing song that you wrote."
Yeah.
It's like, what? I didn't write this. This, this is the Beatles. Like, who are the Beatles? Sort of thing. It's the new Danny Boyle movie.
Mm-hmm.
We did Slumdog Millionaire, Trainspotting. 28 days later, some other stuff. And I guess Kate McKinnon's in this.
Mm-hmm.
So if you need even more reason to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty cool movie from what it looks like here. Hopefully it pans out.
Yeah.
Kind of weirdly reminds
I like
me.
The concept.
Yeah, it kind of weirdly reminds me of a manga I read a while back. Called Boku wa Beatles, which is basically about a bunch of dudes and a Japanese Beatles cover band who find themselves transported back to late 50s Japan.
Yeah.
And they just decide, you know what? Why don't we just be the Beatles? But anyway, yeah, so sounds like a nice idea. All right. Next up, Nickelodeon. They're getting a Paddington Bear show.
Yep.
Hell yeah.
After the movies that I've heard great things about.
Oh, they're awesome.
Yeah, Ben Whishaw is going to reprise his role as Paddington for this CG animated series. It's going to follow the adventures of a younger Paddington.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be out on Nickelodeon's networks in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, something to look forward to. Yeah, if you haven't seen those movies, it's like I've heard it described as weaponized childhood joy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've definitely seen people like when they announce like the nominees for like the Oscars, people get pissed that Paddington isn't on there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Anyway, next up, Hulu has ordered for 4 animated adult Marvel shows that are going to be in tune with the Offenders storyline.
Yeah. So. This is a pretty weird mix of shows. So there's Howard the Duck. There's MODOK.
Mm-hmm.
Hitmonkey. And the last one is Tigra and Dazzler.
It sounds like a theme here.
Yeah. Yeah. All of their weird shit. So mm-hmm. Howard the Duck is written and executive produced by Kevin Smith and Dave Willis.
That obviously, hits. You know,
Kevin Smith is. And yeah. Let's see. Yeah, Willis previously co-created popular animated shows like Aqua Teen Hunger Force and Squidbillies.
Yeah, he's perfect for this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
MODOK, which is the weird head dude. Mm. Essentially has a giant head and his body is like very small.
Oh yeah, MODOK?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know him.
It's gonna be written and executive produced by Jordan Blum and Patton Oswalt. Blum of Community and American Dad fame.
Mm-hmm.
Oswalt, obviously, comedian and all that.
Was Remy and Ratatouille.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see. MODOK. You know what MODOK stands for?
No.
Mental organism designed only for killing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Basically a giant head with arms and legs. That's MODOK.
Yeah. I know very much like Ryan Davis. That was his favorite Marvel character. Just fucking
kind of fun to play in Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
Yeah.
Let's see. Hitmonkey is written and executive produced by Josh Gordon and Will Speck, the team that previously co-directed films like Blaze of Glory and Office Christmas Party.
Mm-hmm.
The show tells the tale of a wronged Japanese snow monkey mentored by the ghost of an American assassin as he cuts a wide swath through the Tokyo underworld.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sounds insane. I want to watch
that.
Yeah.
Tigra and Dazzler hails from writers and executive producers Erica Rivenoja and Chelsea Handler.
Mm-hmm.
Rivenoja worked on the story for the film Girls Trip. Her previous writing credits include shows like The Last Man on Earth, South Park, and Grounded for Life. And obviously, Chelsea Handler had her own show on E! And Netflix. So, yeah. A pretty weird set of shows and definitely seems like Marvel is kind of expanding some of their digital stuff with Hulu versus Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of stuff.
Well, it's kind of weird because Disney's doing their streaming service,
yeah.
And you'd think this is the kind of stuff that they would want
to. I think they're trying to keep that more like
child friendly.
Yeah.
Versus the
family friendly, I guess.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Versus these ones being very much about being
more on the mature end.
Weird and raunchy and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm into it.
And probably one of the big announcements this week, we finally got a teaser trailer for Frozen 2.
Yep.
And it is awesome.
Yep.
I'm just so glad I don't work in retail anymore.
Yeah. And having this in like Kingdom Hearts 3 is like a big seller for kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder what the Blu-ray and digital sales for the original Frozen were
after
now that Kingdom Hearts is out. I'm sure a lot of those movies are seeing resurgences.
Oh, I mean, they're good movies, so yeah, they should. But yes, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
But basically, the teaser we got seems to imply that the movie's going for a more epic, heroic feel. A good chunk of the teaser involves, you know, Elsa apparently stuck on like an island or something, and she's trying to find a way to get off. So she takes off, you know, her gloves and shoes, and she decides, all right, I'm going to run across the ocean. And remember, this is Elsa, so she can do that.
Mm. Yeah.
That may take a while.
Well, yeah, because remember, if her, you know, as soon as her feet touch the water, it freezes. But yeah. the thing is, it's an ocean that's constantly in motion.
Mm-hmm.
So it basically, she ends up having to like deal with waves and shit, and it's just, you gotta watch it. It's cool.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it kind of seems like it has a little bit of Moana vibe in that early part of it.
People have been predicting that this is going to be like a start of like a crossover thing or something.
Hmm.
Yeah, sure.
Because if you see the way it looks, it's like, like you can see why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I looked up the Frozen Wikipedia page. Mm-hmm. On the first day of release on Blu-ray and DVD, Frozen sold 3.2 million units, become one of the biggest home video sellers in the last decade, as well as Amazon's best-selling children's disc of all time.
Again, one as day it should be. That. It's a good movie.
Yeah, the digital download release of the film also set a record as the fastest-selling digital release of all time. Finished its first week at number one in the unit sales in the U.S., selling more than three times as many units as other 19 titles in the charts combined.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, people like that movie.
Yeah. Sold almost 4 million units in its first week, kind of for 50% of its opening home media sales.
Mm-hmm. But in the Arendelle section of Kingdom Hearts 3, all of the original voice actors are there. So, you know, Idina Menzel is Elsa, you know.
Yeah, I need to see that.
Yeah.
And the only Frozen stuff I've seen is from Once Upon a Time.
Yeah. Mm. And like I said also, they do the song, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it on YouTube, how they did it. But
yeah, I think I saw a story saying that.
Pass.
Josh Gad is worried about spoilers.
Yeah.
Mm.
Next up, we're getting a Breaking Bad movie. Well, a sequel movie that's going to be featuring Aaron Paul, and it's going to be on AMC and Netflix.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think Netflix is going to have the first run rights.
Mm-hmm.
And then it will air on AMC afterwards, which is pretty neat.
I just wonder where you go after Breaking Bad.
Vince Gilligan's going to be involved again.
Mm-hmm.
Along with the other...
if you're wondering where do you go after Breaking Bad, you get Better Call Saul. That's
before.
Yeah. That's the lead-up.
Yeah, that's true.
Sources say it'll follow the escape of a kidnapped man and his quest for freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
And we live in the golden age of television right now, don't we?
You're not kidding.
I really do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's we're going to watch out for that. Looks like it's going to be awesome. Hulu, next story. We've got the first trailer for Hulu's adaptation of Joseph Heller's famous book, Catch 22. It's being directed by George Clooney.
Starring George Clooney.
No, he's directing it as well.
Yeah. I'm saying both.
Yeah.
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 So Catch 22. I read that book when I was in high school. Basically, what it is it takes place during World War II, and it let's just say a lot of stuff happens in it. But basically, it sort of uses a kind of non-chronological narration, so shit happens at different points of time in no particular order. And it sort of talks about, you know, them. It's during it's from 1942 to 1944, during the Mediterranean arm of the war, you know, west of Italy. And basically it talks about this dude named John Yossarian and his unit out there. who are trying to basically maintain their sanity during the fight so that they can return home. Because the thing is, there is a way that you can supposedly be... There's something they have in there. It's called the Catch-22. You guys have heard that phrase used before, yeah. right? Well, this is where it comes from. And, you know, in the definition, it's a problematic situation for which the only solution is denied by a circumstance inherent in the problem or by a rule.
Damned if you do or damned if you don't.
Yeah. So in Catch-22, this is what the Catch-22 was. And this is straight from the book. It's page 56, chapter 5. There was only one catch, and that was Catch-22, which specified that a concern for one's safety in the face of dangers that were real and immediate was the process of a rational mind. This one kid, I'm going to call him John Orr, was crazy and could be grounded. All he had to do was ask, and as soon as he did, he would no longer be crazy when have to fly more missions. Or would be crazy to fly more missions and sane if he didn't. But if he were sane, he would have to fly them. If he flew them, he was crazy and didn't have to. But if he didn't want to, he was sane and had to. Osarian was moved very deeply by the absolute simplicity of this clause of Catch-22 and let out a respectful whistle. Yeah, it's literally like the idea is like, to get out and be declared crazy, you have to be shown to not be rational. But the thing is that if you go up against major dangers that are real and imminent, you're obviously rational because you recognize them as rational. And you want to get out of them to avoid them, so that's rational.
And yeah, and you go on.
So you have to go. The thing is that the actual missions that he's being put out to are, in fact, completely insane.
Yeah.
And he would have to be insane to actually do them. But because he recognizes that they are insane and wants to stay out of them for self-preservation, proves that he's rational. So you see...
Yeah.
That's what Catch-22 is. And it's going to be on Hulu soon.
This will be one
to watch. And finally... Oh, by the way, let me...
Well, we have two.
Well, no, we've got this one, which was actually just what I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
We got one more.
Aladdin.
Everybody knows that Disney has been putting out sort of live-action adaptations of their older movies. I think they started this with Cinderella, then they did it with The Jungle Book, and then they did it with Beauty and the Beast. Mm-hmm. And we know they're also going to do it for Lion King and Dumbo.
Yeah.
And the most recent one is Aladdin. We finally got to look at Will Smith's genie.
Yeah, I noticed that the genie looks a lot like Will Smith.
Yeah.
Like, they're not even trying. Oh.
I think that's kind of how you have to do it. Because
but
you're not going to get the Robin Williams vibe out of it.
No. You can't really do Robin Williams. I mean, okay, like, I was a little bit unnerved that they went, you know, snarky genie, but then I remembered that genie was always snarky.
Yeah.
So that part kind of fits. I don't know. I have to give this movie the benefit of the doubt because the rest of the stuff that I saw looked really good.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And that's out in May, about 2 months, 3 months from now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, to be fair, all the other attributes are right there with, right there with the original. You know, he's blue. He's got the pencil beard.
Yep.
All that.
But he just looks a lot like Will Smith.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I do believe we got a show, folks.
Yeah. Technical issues and all, we got through it.
Yep. So, I would like to remind all our viewers, if you've got something you want to ask, a question, comment, something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked to you in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can catch our little bit of choreographed, scripted insanity over at... Apple Podcasts, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, pretty much anywhere where, you know, podcasts like ours can be downloaded and listened to at your leisure. So, for Let's Weekend, I have been your host for the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Anolfo, Patrick Niflin, Chris Elogia, Teresa Sammons. Good night.